Hello.
Hey.
Welcome to the School Sucks Project.
Hey there, are you new? Well, then let me tell you a little bit about what's happening here. School Sucks Project is a podcast, YouTube channel, and web community promoting real education and deconstructing state indoctrination, also known as government school. We discuss learning alternatives, self-education, critical thinking, history, peaceful parenting, personal growth, self-sufficiency, and better communication strategies. In other words, congrats. You just found yourself a valuable resource, in my opinion. Please follow us on Twitter at School Sucks Show and subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast. And if you happen to fall in love with the show, you can also support us. Like us on Facebook so you can share our content with your real and fake friends. And you can even become a member of our AV Club, the bonus content section for just $6 a month. You get access to a ton of additional stuff and it really helps the show. We also take Bitcoin. There's a QR code on the front page of the site. Thanks for listening. And here's the show. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to School Sucks Podcast. Today is June 16th, and coming up, my interview on Peace News Now with Derek J., our most popular guest ever. I got to be on his show, and I had a great time. This is only the first hour. If you want to watch the full video show, it is up on our website, schoolsucksproject.com. Links to all Derek's projects available there as well. And I really enjoyed this conversation. I appreciated his feedback. I appreciated his questions. And I was pleased that I found some new ways to tell a story that I've generally told on the show before. So I thought this was worth including. And here's what's coming up, hopefully all this week on School Sucks. I did a very interesting show yesterday with Daryl Becker. So Daryl back on the show again, but this time he was actually in studio in Keene with his daughter, Cypress. She's on the show too. She's the star of the show. And I will try to get that to you ASAP. I also have recorded the next installment in the Renegade History course with Thaddeus Russell. So that is in the can. But if you open that can and look in there now, I'd be embarrassed because it's a mess. So I'll be cleaning that up this week. And hopefully I'll have that to you by Friday. So in the meantime, I hope you enjoy my discussion with Derek J. This guy is great. I love working with this guy. So here it is.
Hi, everyone. I had a lot of fun making this podcast with Brett Vinat of SchoolSucksProject.com. We danced to the spinners, taught each other some dance moves. We talked about alternatives for young people's education. And we talked about news of peaceful resistance that's making the headlines. I think this is one of the best episodes yet. Enjoy. Peace News Now, episode 91. Hello and welcome. This is Peace News Now. We are live this Sunday, June 8th, 2014. Happens to be my 25th birthday.
Happy birthday.
And that voice is Brett Vinat. He is from the School Sucks Project. Check it out at schoolsucksproject.com. He's going to be joining me during this whole episode inside Peace News Now Studios, what we're calling Studio B, above LRN Studios. And it's very good to be with you, Brett.
It's very good to be with you, too. And I'm, like, really happy that I was the guest on your birthday. It feels very special. So it's good to be here.
Yeah, it's cool. Well, we're just hanging out. It's I've never had you on this show. And Peace News Now is now almost 2 years old. And I love your show. We're both LRN brethren.
Yes.
We share the airwaves on LRN. And I just think it's important to get to know the other co-hosts. And if some people who listen to this show don't know that the School Sucks Project or the podcast is happening, then this is their opportunity to get filled in. And I'm sure most people are already familiar with it, but I thought we would take some time to talk about who you are and what the project is, because I think it's one of the best, most important projects for peaceful resistance. And that's what this show is all about. You can call in. Our number is 443-424-8347. That spells out Hi-Fi Civ Dis. So if you want to make your thoughts known or ask a question of Brett, you can do that by calling in or Skyping us at all one word, Peace News Now. We'll be happy to take your calls. And so, Brett, Who are you? And how did you start this podcast? And when did it begin?
Sure. The podcast started in 2009. And I'd been working in education for almost a decade at that point. And I had done a variety of different jobs. I had been like a residential counselor, it was called, at a boarding school. And I eventually worked my way up to being a teacher there and saw a lot of things, you know, about what it was like.
Is a residential counselor like a guidance counselor?
No, it's more of like a euphemism for a job that anybody in the town could get, you know, where you go and just kind of supervise the kids in the residential setting. So
supervise. You're just watching, just making sure they're not killing each other,
well,
or what?
Interacting with them, helping them through their routines, doing discipline when necessary. And
what did discipline involve?
It involved a lot of things.
Did you have to dish out any discipline?
At the time, I did. Yeah. And at the time, I had a much different attitude.
Bare-bottom spanking?
No, we used to do restraints, physical restraints.
Get out.
Yeah.
Like strapping kids to chairs or something?
No, not using any kind of straps. That would have been a little too much. We used to use this technique. It was called non-abusive physical and psychological
interventions. Well, if it's non-abusive, if it's right there in the description, if it's right there in the title, then it can't be abusive, right?
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of euphemisms in my description of this job.
Yikes.
So we called it was nappy. That is what it was called. And basically what we would do is there's a couple different ways to do it, and it changed while I was there, but basically we would use kids' arms as a straitjacket and kind of put them down on the ground face first and just kind of hold them there until they would calm down.
Did that work? Did that calm students down to be put face down on the ground and restrained?
Is
that a calming thing? I mean, like, who does the research for this where they're like, we're going to calm the kids down and, you know, forget the music, forget the calm water. We're not going to give them a drink or anything. It's just going to be restrain them and throw them on the ground. Like, who are the people who come up with this? Are they experts of some kind?
Expert is a term that people use. They're pretty loose with that word, expert.
It's just so sick to think about, like, some guy, you, Brett, you're a young guy and you come into this job and they're like years, centuries of history behind education. And they've been presumably trying to figure out the best way to educate kids. And then they teach you, like, here, put them face down and use their arms to help restrain them. That will calm them down.
Well, and that's interesting because it was a calming them down, or do they just eventually submit? And they would eventually submit and calm down, meaning they wouldn't fight anymore, and then they would be let up. And needless to say, even though I knew none of what I know now, over time, and in fact, it happened pretty quickly, this job started to wear on me. And I was a small guy at the time, like I was my height, but I was 21, so I probably weighed like 140 pounds,
right? Yeah.
And you know, my boss was, he was like 6'7", 300 pounds. He was like almost in the NBA, but he hurt his knees. He's like, you gotta hit the gym. So that's actually when I started.
He said that as a recommendation because you were gonna have to battle these students.
Oh, because I looked like there were kids and I would just look like a rodeo rider, like, like flopping around on the back of a kid who had been, you know, obviously fed bad food. Right. On these drugs that lead to weight gain and maybe big to start with. Like some of the kids there were 6'2", 6'3", much bigger than me. So I started to try, and that was the mentality though of the school, like, beef up so you can do this job because you're a guy, you know. Now there were women who worked there and they weren't expected to do obviously these kinds of physical restraints, but I was getting thrown around a lot by kids, and that was actually when I started to try to beef up a little bit for this job at the behest of my supervisor.
And what was the exact title of this job?
Residential counselor.
Okay.
That was my first job title, but...
You don't think that in education, beefing up is going to be part of the job requirements.
You wouldn't think so. So, but the... why did I mention that? Because I felt like that had a point. Oh, because I was a smaller guy... I realized that it was important for me to come up with other strategies to deal with disputes because there were some like big guys who worked there, right? And like they were kind of like heavies, like bouncers, you know?
Yes.
And they had no problem going to the physical thing because they were big and they could physically restrain kids. But I couldn't always do that.
That's their arena.
That's their, and there were a lot of people. This was kind of the other sick thing. There was a lot of people who were attracted to the job for that reason.
Did you fight growing up? Were you a fighter?
Never.
Okay.
Never.
So this was totally new to you with this job.
Yes. I've been in one fight in my life. I was very drunk. It was with a friend. His name was Kevorkian. It was a weird,
wow.
It was a weird situation. It was like a fake fight. It wasn't even a real fight because neither of us had ever been in a fight before.
So you were just impersonating what you thought fighters should be doing in a fight.
Like, no.
Did you pull out the Irish like fists of fury? I don't know what those.
It was like
bending fists are. You know?
It might have looked like that, but we were in college. We had been drinking and we were outside talking civilly. I said, "Have you ever been in a fight?" And he said, "No, neither have I." And then he said, "What do you think it's like?" And, you know, our inhibitions were lowered to the point where we said, "Let's give it a try.
Let's try it."
So we wound up.
What could go wrong?
We wound up hurting each other a little bit. And there was some blood. And then we decided, you know, that's silly.
Who won? Did you chew any ears?
It was a draw. It was a complete draw. He hit me.
Did anyone fight dirty?
No, it was one punch each.
Okay.
And then we realized fighting is stupid.
That hurts.
Yeah. So, yeah, so no, I was not
a
fighter.
You're not a fighter, but you got into education to presumably to help young people or to help yourself. Was it just for money or was this your passion?
I was becoming more concerned with like the world around me. I was in college when I started this job and I had, you know, had a history teacher who was very liberal. I was liberal at the time too and learned a lot about how the state takes care of people at this place. You know, I was starting to think like it was important for me to give something or to see the world, the larger picture. And I'd also done an internship just like in the year before working at this job with a film producer who was also very active politically in Massachusetts and had done a lot with the Department of Education there. So I said, you know, I gotta get involved. And, you know, if you're like a young college kid and you want to get involved and help people, who do you work for? Either a charity or the government.
Yeah, usually the state. Did you have an upbringing that made you feel that way? I feel like a lot of people have liberal guilt. They feel guilty for having a comfortable upbringing. And then they want to give back and they want to go to those rough neighborhoods or something. Was that sort of your inspiration?
Both my parents were pretty conservative and I developed this liberal guilt in college.
Uh-huh.
I was like, well, I'm so white and upper middle class. I should really help somebody, you know?
Yeah.
And you're right. That is this idea of taking responsibility for other people or, you know, being the steward of all these less fortunate, it causes a lot of problems. Like it's a nice sentiment to start with to want to help people.
Yeah.
But we've seen that it can also get pretty out of control. And you can also use the good intentions of young kids like me in this job for something that's a little bit more malevolent. And that's what happened.
We're talking with Brett Vinat. Check out his website, schoolsucksproject.com. And we will return with some of your questions from the chat room. This is PNN. 443-424-8347. That is the number to connect and chat with Brett Vinat and Derek J. We are the hosts tonight of Peace News Now, a show that comes to you twice a week live from LRN.fm, talking about the stories of peaceful resistance. Now, tonight's a little bit of a different type of show. We're going in depth with one of the co-hosts of an LRN.fm produced show called The School Sucks Project or The School Sucks Podcast by Brett Vinat. And the website is Project.
Yes.
But it's also called, it's a podcast. But you have video as well, don't you?
Yeah, we got a YouTube channel, School Sucks, username School Sucks Podcast.
Right. So people can check that out. And you've got some of the greatest videos. You spend some time editing videos down, not just from your podcasts, but from the greatest history lesson ever told, or what was that?
That's a better. It's the Underground History of American Education, but I like the greatest history lesson ever. That's an idea for a title for something.
Yeah, and I just listened to an entertaining acoustic a cappella song that you did across continents. That was something worth checking out as well. You've got a variety of videos. It's not the dry type of, hey, why don't I tune into an MIT classroom and listen to some professor at a whiteboard. You're actually you've got music and all kinds of entertainment to enrich people's lives and their brains.
Yeah. Yeah, I say, you know, if you want 10 minutes of somebody's time, I think you should be able to teach them a couple of things You know, because you can't, I mean, how many things are you really going to internalize and remember if something is like really, really dense? You know, you might have to watch it a few times. So like, hey, let me entertain you while you learn two things. That's my goal. So laugh three times, learn two things, go on to the next thing you got to do.
Well, I think you do an excellent job. So we were talking about who you are before this podcast even came about, and you were in education, but you weren't doing very much educating.
No. For the first year and a half that I had this job, I was really frustrated with the work that I had to do. It was very much grunt work, and I did start getting bigger, and that was helpful. But it wasn't the kind of but I didn't want to do hands-on work with kids like that. I didn't want to be physical and aggressive or responding to aggression with physical force. It really just wasn't enjoyable. It was very stressful.
So what did you have in a picture in your mind? Like Dead Poets Society type, I'll sit at the top of the classroom and all these kids will just love listening to me and they won't act out of turn or anything. I won't have to restrain anyone. What was your envision?
Well, this is what I started to picture. I said, that's what I really want. Because when I didn't have any credentials or really any skills, I had to start at the bottom of this school.
Yeah.
But after 6 months, they started to promote me. It was a private school, so you could work through the ranks pretty quickly. And the change in my job was I was made an outdoor educator. Better job title and much better job, because now once a week, I would get to take kids either skiing or kayaking or hiking. And getting these kids out of that environment and out into the wilderness, the world of difference that it made.
Were these special types of kids? Do they have special needs?
Yeah, they were often had a special education classification, IEP.
Because I'll tell you, I didn't want to go outside when I was in school, and I was not what some schools would classify as special needs, but I did not want to go and play outside for school. That would have been torture. But you said these kids liked it?
They loved to go ski
and stuff?
We would ski, and I would get paid.
That's not learning. Why did they get to ski?
But it learning is a lot of things, right?
Okay.
So this was actually one of the best parts of the job, because this is what, like in school, you can be like, I'm the toughest kid in the world, right? But you learn a lot about yourself when you're thrown into a river, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
And there was a lot of emotional learning and dealing with challenges.
Wow.
And
so it's real life learning.
Life is learning, right?
Yeah.
So you can learn anywhere. I think a place that it's particularly hard to learn in is a school, right? In a classroom.
Yes.
That's the trick. But once we got these kids outside and they were in an environment where suddenly they felt comfortable challenging themselves, because they didn't have like a history of failure. Like in school, they didn't behave. They didn't like to go. So their history in school was, you know, you're dumb. You need to be controlled, and being evaluated and judged and all the carrots and sticks stuff. But now they get outside, they're in a fresh environment, and suddenly they're enthusiastic about challenging themselves. So it was fantastic. And their behavior was totally different. You got to see the impact that the school environment was having on their behavior. Now, these kids had trouble past, right? Like they might have come from broken homes. They might have had parents who were drug addicts or abusive situations, foster care.
Yeah.
A lot of abuse happens there. So they had numerous challenges, but they had always failed, you know, in school. So to get them out of school and make a learning environment out of the world, which is the best learning environment, was actually really fantastic. And it really, like, I had quit the job and gone and worked at a ski resort, like as a marketing guy, because I was like, I've got to use my degree, you know. So after like a year and a half of working at this place, I graduated from college. I had a communications degree. So I quit and I went and did that for a few months. Then 9/11 happened and they said, we don't need people because no one's coming here. No one's going to travel. So I wound up back at the school working in education and outdoor education. So now I didn't have that residential counselor job anymore.
Okay.
So now I was in the school and I was working with kids in small groups as a teacher's aide. And I was still doing the outdoor education like twice a week.
So it was just getting sweeter for you. Did you ever become a real teacher? Like, I'm Mr. Vinat, and you write your name up on the board, and they come into your classroom every day, 5 days a week. Did you ever have an environment like that?
Yes. So it was interesting. There was this specialized campus for kids who had particularly severe behavior issues, and most of them were the results of sexual abuse. So I went from being a teacher's aide to the head teacher of this campus.
Whoa.
In one conversation. right? Because I proved that I was competent. Like, I'd been there long enough. The supervisor who said, hey, you got to hit the gym, he also did a good job training me of, like, how to deal with situations, how to be assertive, which is really important.
Yeah. He had recommendations for you as well about how to climb the ladder.
Well, he understood that, like, being assertive, I think, and projecting confidence is really important when working with that population of kids. I mean, that was absolutely right. He wasn't just like, yeah, put on 50 pounds, here's some creatine and some protein shakes, and if they do anything, restrain them, right? He said that was one part of the job, but part of it was, you know, presenting the way you present and how you assert yourself. Because I was, in addition to being small, I was relatively meek because I'd never been exposed to anything like this before in my life. And when I started this job, I was quite scared of the kids. And that didn't work, right? I didn't have to have the kids scared of me, but me being scared of them, that was not a good situation for anybody. So that started to change. And I'd worked myself up to a place by 2002 where I asked for a lead teacher job.
There it is. We'll continue the story of Brett Vinat becoming successful podcaster at LRN.fm when PNN returns. Welcome back to Peace News Now. We are live this Sunday, June 8th, 2014. We're joined by Brett Vinat, who's telling us how he came to be this podcaster. And then we're going to go through in the second hour some news stories with Brett, and we're going to get his thoughts on some of the things that are going on in the world of peaceful resistance. But I wanted to have Brett on because education is sort of the ultimate peaceful resistance. It doesn't take any violence to teach someone something. You don't have to use violence to teach someone something.
It's possible without violence.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And it's not as... It can be seditious without people realizing how seditious it is. If you mm-hmm. just teach someone something, like there's like hidden knowledge that people, I don't know, people get a little crazy about occult stuff, like ancient hidden knowledge. But there's this actual hidden knowledge, like what the controllers do, the people who govern the rest of us. They've got knowledge about human ownership and human ownership farms, like how they farm, and I'm using that word loosely, but mm-hmm. yeah, they have farms. They have like tax farms, and explaining that to people could give us a freer, more peaceful future. Yeah. And so I have a lot of hope for your podcast doing that for the young people.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you make a great point about the farming. I mean, if you don't believe that these things go on and these kinds of like conspiracies of the scientific management of human beings exist, go to a chicken farm. Just go to a chicken farm and observe, okay? Chicken's IQ is 4 or 5. In its lifetime, maybe it can produce 350 eggs and 3 pounds of meat if it's a meat bird. I don't even think birds that produce eggs and meat are the same.
No, they're not the same.
All right, so you're talking like 300 eggs or a few pounds of...
Layers and broilers.
Mm-hmm. And if you go to the farm, you'll see how much thought has been put into controlling them, keeping them where they are, and getting the maximum productive output out of them for somebody's benefit. Our average IQ is like 100, and we can produce a lot more than a few hundred eggs. In fact, if it wasn't for us, we couldn't even have those chicken farms. So do people really think that nobody ever put that kind of thought, the thought that went into chickens, into them? You know, so
yeah, but it's a scary thought. It's something
it's
people don't want
to.
They don't want to think about it because they've been probably ignorant of it for most of their lives. Yeah. And waking up to it can be jostling.
Yeah.
Was it jostling for you just to consider that, or were you always kind of aware?
Yeah. Yeah. I was woken up to it in college by a very liberal history professor, you know, who said, you know, it's not the Disney version that you guys have been getting in school up until now. And he introduced us to like Noam Chomsky and Howard Zinn. And even I think that's even where I found the great book by James Lowen called Lies. My teacher told me this was a book that I read in college. So, yeah, that was like a real waking up as to how the world, learning about how the world actually works and what people out there are actually doing. But eventually I learned what we're supposed to be doing, which is also occulted in school, and that's thinking critically, right? Critical thinking is absent from most of school. You're kind of given things and asked to regurgitate it back eventually. So to be able to really learn that there's a process of critical thinking is very, very helpful, because if you make it explicit, you can remember to do it. You can remember that it needs to be applied to personal situations, professional situations, creative situations, exploratory situations. So there's a method.
Do you ever just veg, like mentally veg? Do you have like TV show, like reality TV that you watch to turn off the critical thinking part of your brain? Or are you just always on?
No, I'm not always on.
All right.
No, so, I try to not be on. You know, in fact, I was last summer, about a year ago, I spent the summer in Connecticut with like the smartest guy I know, this guy named Richard Grove, and he does this Peace Revolution podcast. And
cool.
He has a site called Tragedy and Hope. He's a genius. And what I found, I said, this guy works so hard. He makes these like 10, 12, 15 hour podcasts. I found out at 5 o'clock every night, he watches like trash TV and says, I want to see what's going on. I want to. So it's not like total vegging out, because it's kind of like, let's see.
He's still studying.
Yeah. Right. But it was nice, because we would sit there a couple nights a week and we would just laugh at like The Soup. You know that show?
Yeah,
The
yeah,
Soup?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I think that downtime is really, really important. And, you know, sometimes a nice little game on the phone or a TV show. I'm real into Game of Thrones and a few others.
Okay, Game of Thrones is your sin right now? Yeah. Or what kind of phone game do you play?
I like Words with Friends. That's a little...
It's interactive. That's a good one, because you're not just... I don't know what the Candy Crush. I don't play any of those games. I don't have enough room on my phone. But it's nice to veg out. I can... empathize. I like to listen to real trashy pop albums and just dance around the room. Like, I think that's a nice brainless activity. That gets you, you know, it gets more mental clarity. At the end of vegging out and doing something completely stupid, I feel a little bit smarter. Isn't there something paradoxical about that?
No, I can totally see, because you need to unwind, you know, and you need to sometimes just get a clean slate. Mine is Rubber Band Man, you know, by the Detroit Spinners. You
know, I don't know what that is.
Oh, what a happy song.
We'll play it during the next break.
Absolutely. So yeah, I get up and dance, or I put headphones on and I'll, you know, I'll do a dance.
Cool.
And that's good for you. People should do that. Sometimes I love a long car trip where, you know, you get tired of listening to podcasts.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I just like, do I have any CDs still?
Yeah, do I have any CDs from the 90s?
Yeah, yeah, and I'll put them in and have a good
Nirvana.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think during the next break we should get a video of you doing whatever kind of dance you do to that Rubber Man song. We got a question from the chat room.
Sure.
Mr. Vinot, as an educator, how do you encourage? And that's just the end of the question. John Galt asks, how do you encourage? I don't think... I don't know what... They could be a little more specific. I think, how do you encourage students to... want to learn, I think is what they're asking, or just encourage them in general?
Well, that's a great question, because when I was in school, one of the things that was frustrating is that you really, once they were in that environment, it was very hard to stimulate people to want to learn. They
have inertia, and there's no momentum. They just have to be pushed.
But how does being pushed feel? Right?
Awful.
So you've come to school with this idea that you've just completely resigned from the idea that there's going to be anything valuable or that I'm going to have a good time here. So the reason why, and I can tie this into the previous narrative, is the reason why I took this job as the lead teacher at this private school. It was a very difficult campus. I said, if I do well here, I would like you to consider me for this history teaching job at this other school that you run. And they did, right? So I put in 2 years at the bad head teacher job that I was talking about. Then they moved me to another school in Manchester Center, Vermont, a nice resort town, and I got to teach history. And I was like, now I am the guy from Dead Poets Society.
Yeah,
cause,
right.
Because I'm in a nice town, and these are kids who don't have as many urgent challenges.
Is it like wooden walls and columns and stuff?
No, it wasn't a nice school, but like a better environment. No more restraints. No more hands-on with the kids.
Oh boy!
Yeah, which is like so. That's where I was in 2004.
That shouldn't be a step up, but okay, that is.
But in 2004, it was like a huge sigh of relief, right, to not have to deal with that physical stuff anymore.
Well, John Galt clarified about his question.
Yeah.
He said, "How do you encourage individualism when surrounded by conformity?"
How do you encourage?
Slightly different question. If you want to think about it, we've got a moment.
Sure.
You can dance during the break and meditate on
like
that
this?
Question.
Yeah. I would say the first thing. Oh, could people not see that hand? I would say that the first thing that people should do as teachers is stop asking everybody to do the same thing.
Very interesting. All right, more thoughts from Brett Vinot. He'll be joining us for the remainder of the program. This is Peace News Now. Welcome back to a very completely serious show. I am here dancing with Brett the Knot to Rubber Band Man by the Spinners. That was a good time, Brett. Thanks. That was our example of how to veg with your brain and get more mental clarity through dancing.
Absolutely.
That was a lot of fun. Thanks. So we only have this one segment to wrap up your whole life story. So bring us to where you're at with the podcast.
Okay, so yeah, I found myself in this really difficult situation in this new job, 2004 to 2006, teaching history, where I thought everything was going to be great, you know? And I found, like, I was just getting the kids too late, you know, their attitudes about education.
They've been broken.
Yeah, so that was, you know, that goes back to John's question about enthusiasm, right? Or individuality. It was very hard to feel efficacious in that job. And in 2006, I left and I started tutoring, like SAT tutoring, academic counseling, college consulting. And I learned a lot and started to get much closer to the public schools between 2006 and 2009. And by 2009, I'd actually started a tutoring company in January of that year. And by the summer, I had had enough of the schools. And I said, it's time to find a way to vent. And that was when I began the podcast. I'd actually been working with Wes Bertrand of Complete Liberty, being an occasional co-host on his show.
You started with him?
I started with Wes.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
School Sucks is a spinoff of Wheels Off Liberty, or not Wheels Off Liberty, Complete Liberty podcast. I've made that mistake twice, and it is so unacceptable.
It's acceptable by me. I wouldn't know. Because I was before, or Wheels Off Liberty was before my time. Tell us what that is.
Wheels Off Liberty was a comedy show that these two guys from Oklahoma did. And the fact that anyone could confuse it with Complete Liberty, which is a very cerebral, serious and dense show, but I've made that mistake twice. I think maybe they both have the word liberty.
Well, that's okay. So you decided this is a bit cathartic for you. You enjoyed doing podcasting. You're like, I have a knack for this. Let me go at it. And you decided, when did you begin?
August 2009.
Okay. And so, wow, you've been at it for
almost
6 years?
5 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, oh yeah. That shows how I can do math. I'm glad you're here.
Yep.
So, how's it been going?
I love it.
Yeah.
I think it is like, because now it's not forcing anything on anybody. You know, it's the show is there and I'm only talking to people who want to hear me, which after 12 years in education is so refreshing.
It really seems like that's how sort of education should be, is the students seek out the teachers, not just like teachers and students get randomly thrown into rooms together.
Yes, absolutely. So, and you know, the other thing too, like I've gotten frustrated a couple times about, you know, the show not growing fast enough. And what I've said to myself is, you know, I can post something now and reach as many people in the next 48 hours as I could maybe in a career.
Wow.
Of teaching.
Isn't that huge?
Yeah.
What kind of students do you look for? Or do you consider yourself a student as well?
Well, I definitely consider myself a student too. I can't believe how much I've learned while doing the show. And originally, I was really hoping we could attract high school kids with our clever School Sucks marketing.
Yeah.
But then
it seems like that would be the major target.
Yeah.
Is high school students, because they've got their whole life ahead of them. They're smart enough and independent enough to do their own thing. And they've learned enough to know that their teachers have been lying to them. Mm-hmm. So this is like the target, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So are they your main demographic?
It actually is people in their early to mid 20s.
Why do you think that is?
Because I think they're more, that's just who's looking for podcasts. I think younger people are more interested in YouTube, and that was one of the reasons why I wanted to try and crack into YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And
which you've done.
Yeah, and really start trying to figuring it out. What we're still trying to do, though, is figure out how to use it to reach those kids. Because it's hard when you, like, you know, you can get 100 million views on YouTube by, you know, filming a woman scared by a bug in 16 seconds on your phone.
Yeah, but how much is that going to affect their life?
Exactly. So the formula for successful YouTube videos is frustrating, because if I'm putting something on YouTube, I want to put a lot of work into the production. And I think sometimes it's like bigger or more involved than it needs to be. And sometimes I think I forget how to speak a language that would resonate with young people because, you know, I've just been doing it for so long. It's hard to like go back to square one. Like in episode one, I knew that I was talking in a way like, hey, here's something for people who've never heard anything like this before. And we're going to start slow and we're going to take it from there. But, you know, 300 episodes later, it's sometimes it's hard to you know, do that presentation still. So I'm still trying to find the right way to hit YouTube effectively.
Tell me about you as a podcaster. Do you have someone who you envision when you're talking into the microphone? Like, is it your Aunt May, or like who are you picturing when you're talking to these people? When you're producing a new episode of the School Sucks podcast?
I picture just listeners that I've interacted with.
Yeah, really. Like past people who you've actually met.
Yeah, yeah, like, oh, you know, so-and-so from Porkfest, or people that I know are really great fans of the show. And like, I just picture them kind of in a room and I'm just talking to them.
Do you only picture it in your mind, or some podcasters and radio broadcasters actually have a photograph of someone that sits by their microphone? Does that help you at all? Have you ever done that?
That's an interesting idea.
It's kind of cool.
It's a great idea for a studio to have like a wall of super fans.
Yeah, right. Like, oh yeah, and we're talking to Jimmy over there in Oklahoma, who you know, wrote in last week. If you've got their picture, it's kind of nice to be able to make eye contact, so to speak, with them.
Yeah, like mail me an 8x12.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's not creepy at all.
And well, there was actually a movie where a guy did this. He was. You ever see the King of Comedy with Robert De Niro?
No, I haven't. Well, I should have seen that.
He was a little crazy, and he wanted to be like the next Johnny Carson, and he would set up a studio with dummies in his basement, and he would paste all his favorite celebrities' faces on these mannequins.
Crazy.
In his mother's basement.
Yeah.
So I want to be able to, you know, I don't want it to go that far.
So you
want to
be that guy.
No, I want to keep King of Comedy in mind. So if I do start buying mannequins, I know I'm over the edge.
I'll watch out for you.
Okay, thank you.
So where's the future of this going? You have, you just started a series. I just checked out your website. You've got a new series that's beginning now. And I've made a note of it, but I've lost my notes. So.
I have three series going on at once right now. The newest one is called Autonomy Through Agorism, where we're exploring these different agorist topics. So we've been doing permaculture for a while, which I think is very, very valuable. We're about to switch to intentional communities, and then we're going to talk about Bitcoin. And that series just can have so many facets because agorism is so, you know, there's so much to agorism.
That is it. That's the things you just mentioned are like the gold star of freedom. You know, that's mm-hmm. if people could just embrace agorism and permaculture just to start, imagine how different the world would be. One of the guests I recently had on the program invented something called permacredits, which is like way to unite Bitcoin and smart contracts and permaculture.
Love it.
It's like the future.
Yeah. And permaculture is really self-sufficiency, right? So what do we do on the show? Do we even talk about school? Do we talk about how school sucks? Not really. That's boring. It takes, you know, we did it for 100 episodes.
And everybody knows that.
And everybody already knows that.
Yeah.
So, you know, now that we're all on the same page, let's talk about what to do about it. So the Autonomy Through Agorism series is really about, even if these aren't things we can all do, at least we can start thinking about new ways to be more self-sufficient, more independent, and more free of the state and really the spider web that we're all kind of born into. And the other things that I have going on right now, Wes Bertrand, who I mentioned, he and I are doing a series on self-esteem using the Six Pillars of Self-Esteem book. We've done 9 parts in that series. And that's also something you're not going to learn about in school. You know, school will use words like self-esteem, have self-esteem by doing what we tell you and getting A's. You know, that's self-esteem. That's
that
not
was
self-esteem.
Always confusing in school because they always talk about, you know, don't bully other people, build up their self-esteem. But we don't really talk much about how to have good self-esteem or what it is.
Yeah. So we've invested, you know, like, so the self-esteem you get in school is good job. You should have high self-esteem.
Sticker.
You please me, you know.
Yeah.
We've done 15 hours of shows now on that topic. So it's pretty involved and there's a lot to it. And Wes and I have a tendency too to get together and say, okay, let's do an hour, and 3 hours later we're done because we're friends and we talk a lot. And the other series, another thing you don't learn in school, history. So I've been having Thaddeus Russell, the author of A Renegade History of the United States, on my show, and he's been really challenging my audience and challenging me in some very interesting ways because he's kind of a left libertarian guy.
Yeah,
and you know, so all of these things going on at once now, you know, how are we programming ourselves, or how are we programmed younger through the self-esteem series? And how are we programmed culturally is what we're exploring through this history series. So that's what we're doing.
Very exciting. And I will continue to follow both at LRN.FM and SchoolSucksProject.com. Coming up, we're going to be talking about the 25-year anniversary of Tiananmen Square, plus a hacker sends the government an invoice for the time he spent in prison. Coming up.